Hello and welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. You can find more podcasts like this by visiting www.educause.edu/podcasts. You can also search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. I'm Jerry Bain for EDUCAUSE, and on this podcast we feature a keynote session from the 2010 Midwest Regional Conference. It's a panel discussion entitled The Future of Higher Education, What is the IT Professional's Role? Our panel includes Linda Yorn, Director for the Office of Information Technology at the University of Minnesota, David Dodd, Vice President for Information Resources and CIO of Xavier University, Robert McDonald, Associate Dean for Library Technologies at Indiana University, and Melissa Wu, Director of Cyber Infrastructure, Networks, and Operations Services at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Our moderator is Jim Koenig, Director of Information Technology Services at the College of St. Benedict and St. John's University.
Our panelists will discuss the roles that IT and IT professionals will play and how IT as a collaborative partner can provide value to the future of higher education. Our panelists have been busy these last couple days synthesizing information, attending the sessions on their tracks so that they can present their thoughts and ideas to you here today. So, before we begin, I just want to mention that I'm, as your moderator, I'll be up here or close by the podium. And this will then... at the podium. And then what we'll do is, after our panelists will each present about a 5-minute discussion, we will present a list of questions to get you and our audience involved in a discussion. So let's start with Linda, please, if you could do your presentation now.
Yes, thank you, Jim. Mm-hmm. And I want to thank the EDUCAUSE Program Planning Committee for a wonderful conference. And I've spoken with many of you in the audience, had some great conversations. And thank you for taking the time to attend this session. And we plan to give you some time to reflect on the conversations and what you've learned over the last couple of days. Today, I want to talk. My main message today is that I think learning technologies possess the competencies to help the academy meet 21st century challenges. I am a learning technologist. I am also always thinking about how you use technology, digital technologies, whether they're communication, collaborative, information technologies, to design, research, and support learning. And I think learning technologists possess some great competencies. I heard a lot about those competencies at this conference, and I want to spend my time talking about the competencies of learning, collaboration, design thinking, faculty development, and research and evaluation. And as a learning technologist, I think we're always asking the main question, how can this technology support learning? I see all technology through the lens of learning and these competencies. So learning technologies understand learning at a very deep level. We're always looking at learning science. Learning is about learning new information, but it's about participating in learning communities. It's about being brave enough to receive critique and feedback, to be assessed. It's about understanding the learner. What prior knowledge do they bring to the learning situation? What previous professional and social communities do they belong to? So they have prior thinking that you may need to unbundle to help them learn something new. So learning technologists think about learning deeply and study learning science. And a key to learning a key competency that learning technologists have is this area of collaboration, partnership, or as Diana talked about on the first day, interdependencies. And I've been doing some research, and there are some researchers out of the UK, Oliver and Mac Avenia, who in 2002, 2006 have done some field studies, ethnographic studies, and been interviewing learning technologists. And they really found that the core to how a learning technologist works is that they have a diverse repertoire of collaborative skills, which allows them to work with a wide range of academics to help in the area of learning. And the specific type of collaboration they really know how to focus on is working with academics in departments to redesign learning activities and curriculums. So we heard about this at the conference. It was DePaul University, Dominican University, talked about designing online virtual teaching centers. So as service units, they're partnering or they have an interdependence on each other to support all of the faculty sharing their services together. But they also have skills as consultants and technologists to meet one-on-one with faculty to help them redesign. So learning technologists have strong collaborative partnership interdependency competencies. And as learning technologists, they really are immersed in the area of faculty development. There are journals about faculty development. There's a whole body of literature. Milt Cox talks about bringing faculty together in faculty learning communities. When I was at the learning environment session, I see some of you in this room that were there, Carrie Page reminded us of EDUCAUSE's top five teaching and learning challenges. How do we help faculty teach in new learning environments? How do we teach learners 21st century, net savvy literacies? How do we help faculty be innovative and innovate and use technology to create new ways of learning and new ways of teaching? And this all speaks to working with faculty to support them as they are learners. And learning technology at the University of Minnesota will work with teams of faculty for 18 months and bring them together and talk about how their life is changing in the academy, how they're going to teach different, how they'll work with teams instead of teaching alone. So the area of faculty development is very important. And as learning technologists work with faculty, they engage in what I like to call design thinking. And how many of you here are familiar with that phrase, design thinking? Okay, I see a few hands. That's great. And Tim Brown, who's the CEO and president of IDEO, a design firm, if you Google on design thinking, you'll find some good information. But he defines design thinkers as people who look at problems through a human-centered, creative, iterative, and practical approach in finding the best ideas and ultimate solutions. And again, learning technologists are working with faculty to redesign or design new learning activities, new courses, and new programs, in the online environment. We talked a lot about learning environments here and new types of spaces to teach. So the understanding backwards design or DeFink's curriculum redesign or how to redesign for a team-based approach to learning, these are critical skills in our academy. And the last thing I want to mention is that learning technologists have strong research and evaluation skills. There were a couple of presenters from University of Minnesota here today, Walker and Christopher Brooks, that talked about some research we're doing in understanding how faculty teach differently in the classroom. And it's important as we design new ways of learning, new ways of teaching, that we really evaluate this and conduct scholarship. So learning technologists can help faculty develop educational research questions, design data collection tools, analyze that data, so they can really share what they're doing in a very scholarly way with their peers and get published in journals. And so really encouraging this reflective thinking in the academy. So I just want to summarize that I'm passionate about learning technology, and I've heard a lot of that at this conference, that these skills of being reflective thinkers, passionate about learning, working with faculty, design thinkers are great competencies for the academy in the 21st century. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Linda. Next up is Melissa.
I'd also like to thank everyone for sticking around for the closing session, as well as the program committee and the wonderful EDUCAUSE staff, who are always great to work with. So I'm handling managing the enterprise. So one of the things I wanted to bring up were some examples that I've heard during the conference. Monday morning during the CIO session that was right before the conference, our colleague Mark Askren, who's at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, posed a really provocative question to the group, and that was, Should we still be talking about building and maintaining data centers anymore? I went to a talk by Nathan Gerber from Utah Valley University, and he said that they were so pleased with their software as a service web CMS that they were starting to look for other services that they might actually use software as a service as their sourcing mechanism. Another thing I saw was in the tweet stream that Simon Kistler had tweeted, and I see you, Simon, looking at your screen. He tweeted that something unusual about this conference was the cloud was no longer being referred to as it, that people were starting to refer to its benefits and the benefits of using the cloud. So what does this actually all mean for the future for those of us who are managing the enterprise? Well, for one thing, I'm going to be out of a job. But for those of us managing the enterprise, or some people understand it to be operations and infrastructure, and maybe to the rest of you, we're the geeks in the back room, this is a little scary. It says a lot about our future going forward and how we're going to have to change our roles. And it speaks a lot to what Diana said during her keynote. She made two of the three implications, she said, for the future of higher education were that the IT professional's role is going to have to change, and the other is that we're going to have some challenges with professional development going forward. So what I assert is that we're going to have to shift away from an infrastructure focus, the single guy standing there with the racks of machines in a very, very cold room with the blinky lights, towards a more client-focused and business focus. That is, where do we actually have value in higher education? Although it's necessary to have data centers and system administrators and database administrators, and I could keep going on, in other words, all the people that report through me and in my organization, yes, that is valuable in order to have all the services that we need to provide to our customers. Is it our core competency in higher ed to be doing these things if someone else can do them for us? I assert that really our real value, especially in this time of a new economic reality, and also in this time where our students and their parents are consumers, and I mean consumers in the sense that they're shopping around for the best bang for their buck in tuition dollars, that the best place for us to put our resources is closer to the faculty and the students and the staff that we serve. That is for learning and teaching. That it's better to have a lot of our resources put into the learning technologists that work with our faculty to make sure that the pedagogy is solid in our online programs. That we want to put people closer to our researchers to actually facilitate their use of technology so they can get the most for their time. These are the things that we should be spending our resources on, and probably not infrastructure. So, how are we preparing for this? Next slide. Oh, there we go. So for the future of... No, we're fine on that one. For the future of education, some of what we're going to have to do is look towards the past, because if there's one constant in IT, it's that we're always changing. Although one could argue that the scope of what we're looking at and changing our roles is somewhat different than the past, this is not new. We've had roles change before. And the one that hits me particularly hard is what was known as the machine room or data center operators. These were the people, for those of you who aren't familiar, who had tasks such as changing out backup tapes in the data center. They manually submitted batch jobs so that HR and student data and payroll could actually get done. Well, we knew that tape libraries that were automated were coming. We knew that automated software would come that would replace the manual batch jobs. We knew these things, and many of our organizations didn't do anything for the people in these roles that we knew would become obsolete. So I actually do have hope for the future because of conferences like this one, because I've heard a lot in this conference that shows me that we know what it is that's coming up in the future. We know what it is that we're going to have to train our IT professionals to know in the future. So I'm going to throw a couple of challenges at all of you. My first challenge is that after attending this conference and other ones like it, you know what skills it is that you need to acquire for the future. So my first challenge to all of you is to get out there, be proactive about your own professional development, because you're the only one who truly cares about your own, and you are the watcher of your own careers. My second challenge is to the senior leaders in this room. You know where you need to lead your people. You know what you need to provide them. So my challenge to you is to make it happen. Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa. David is now going to talk about his thoughts and observations with the leadership track.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning. I want to thank you as well for a wonderful conference, for the presenters, for your opportunity to stay here today and be part of this presentation, this panel, this discussion as well. Thanks to EDUCAUSE. What a wonderful, wonderful segue Melissa provides to talk about one of the issues that we face today, which is leadership. And leadership is not a position. Leadership is what we do. It is a practice that we engage in. We are, and I want to go back to what Melissa said and say, boy, what a perfect, you know, way to talk about the fact that we are all on a journey of professional development and experience. We, if IT professionals know about anything, it should be that we know about change. As I look back over my career, and longer than I want to think about now, I have seen so many companies and manufacturers and things that have come and gone. It's, you know, there's the only constancy in technology is, in fact, change. So that's one thing that we really need to keep in mind. As I think back about the presentations I've heard this week, as I think back about Diana Oblinger's talk, I can, you know, kind of point to a number of themes that we've discussed. One of those is continuous strategic change. And what I mean by that is we need to be very intentional about change. We need to think about change. We need, as much as anything, to make sure that no matter what role we play in an organization, we are trying to build a culture in that organization that views change positively and as opportunities. That's a critically important opportunity that we have, is to view change in that context. Accountability. We have accountability as individuals. The departments and units that we're part of have accountability. And one of the most important themes in higher education today is the accountability of institutions and the accountability of higher education to the American society and public of which we are a part. That is an enormous challenge that institutions face today. Being, related to that is the issue of being of institutional effectiveness. How do we know? You know, what evidence do we have to show that we are operating as efficiently and effectively as possible as institutions, that we are spending taxpayers' money efficiently and effectively? How do we know that students are actually being educated well and prepared for lives and careers in the 21st century? And in the past, there was a lot of tolerance, or far more tolerance, for we know because we know. And society's become very intolerant of that. And as professionals, IT professionals, we actually have a very important role to play in that with regard to bringing evidence to bear, which leads to the next topic here, being information-driven. You know, at many institutions, there is a view that if information, and I intentionally do not use the word data here, the last thing in the world that my president, my cabinet, my board of trustees wants to see is data. What they want to see is information that is actionable, that is easily understood. And there is a view that in some places that only institutional research has that responsibility. And today, I think, if anything, it really has to be clearly understood that information technology has an enormous role to play in mining data out of our ERP systems, of helping to produce it in the form of information that is meaningful and actionable to the institutions that we serve. Reflection and planning. You know, one of the things we need to do is take time to think, to think about the future, to plan for the future. We spend a lot of time with our noses down trying to do our jobs. If there's ever been a time in the history of our profession and in the history of higher education for kind of pulling back thinking, trying to look at things in a larger context, it's now. Self-improvement is directly related to that. And I go back to what Melissa was talking about. How do we make sure that we are preparing as well as we can for the future? How do we make sure that we are developing as professionals? And I'll say a few things here. First of all, one of the things, going back to something that Diana said, was we have to really engage in what I call supra-paradigmatic thinking. And that is that we have to think outside of the box. We have to realize that the reality constructs, such as having our own data centers, is something that we have to think beyond. We can't hold on to that. We can't be locked in that kind of thinking. We have to be very intentional. We have to understand that we have the opportunity to help create our own future. We have the opportunity, a very real opportunity, to help create the future for our institutions and indeed for higher education as well. But one of the things we also have to understand is that humans are not very good about change. We're not always comfortable with it. And there is a wonderful kind of a paradox here, that if we want to have the opportunity to help create our own future and the future for our institutions, then we have to be able to tolerate a great deal of ambiguity, which is to say, we have to walk in a very intrepid manner, a very intentional manner, thinking about the future, helping to create that future. We can't be comfortable, a false sense of comfort in hoping that someone tells us what the future is going to be. We have the opportunity to help create that future, and we have to engage in some things that are not necessarily comfortable for humans to do. We have the opportunity to lead that change, to help craft a future for higher education, and it's more than an opportunity. It is an imperative that we do that as professionals. And so one of the things that I'll leave you with today that we're going to come back to is, how do we do that? How do we think about our roles as professionals? How do we make sure that we are engaging in the kind of professional development, the kind of intentional thinking about the future, the kind of thinking beyond the paradigms that we know today? And the folks in this room that are able to do that, that have the confidence to do that, the will to do it, are the leaders of tomorrow. And I, like Melissa said, I've become very cynical in truth about where higher education is today and about the future. And every time I come to one of these conferences and I listen to the presentations, I listen to the speakers, we have a chance to talk one another with our peers, that cynicism goes away, and there's an enormous amount of hope that that comes in that says, we can do this. We can do this, and we must do this. And I think the people in this room, the fact that you're here points to the fact that that we're capable of doing this, and you have the wherewithal to do it, the right stuff.
Thank you, David. Thank you. Next up is Robert, and his track is e-research and e-scholarship.
Thanks a lot, Jim. First of all, I just want to thank everybody for their wonderful presentations in the e-research and e-scholarship track. I saw some wonderful presentations, including things that really kind of highlight both what Diana talked about in our opening keynote and also what I'm going to talk a little bit about here. And I put this slide in to talk about, you know, X as a service. It's software as a service predominantly now, but I think we're going to see that become much more pervasive. And I just had the privilege of hearing a wonderful talk by a guy named Rod Johnson, who basically is the founder of Spring, which is a coding platform. And his company just got bought by VMware. And this was one of his key themes in his talk. And there's plenty of his keynotes that are online, so you can go hear one of those because he's such a dynamic speaker. But what he really left me with was thinking about what we've all talked about here today, and that's that sense that I call building community. And when you take it to that next level, like Diana talked about the other day, she called it a shared interdependence. And as this kind of component becomes more pervasive, we've already seen this. We had tracks here where Northwestern University was talking about their mobile platform, which sits in the cloud and interoperates with a key API component that they have to basically provide the context for the user so that they have a mobile platform to use, which is software as a service out in the cloud, but then it integrates locally for the students and the researchers' context for that. We also saw other great examples of this community and shared interdependence building when we heard tracks such as the one from the University of Nebraska, where they talked about their high-throughput computing initiatives and how they were teaming up in the open science grid to really form that area of interdependence and fully use both their compute resources as well as those of their partners in the open science grid so that they could provide even more opportunities for their researchers there. The other big piece that I saw coming out of the e-scholarship end of things was the talk about repositories, institutional repositories. Well, now is the time for us to really be thinking about where those are going in the future and how we leverage the resources that make those institutional repositories available at scale. And that's going to happen through the use of the cloud. And my next slide here, this actually comes a little bit from that keynote I heard the other week at the JSIG developer meeting. And he had divided up his clouds, you know, into internal clouds, and that's kind of the stuff where you have some kind of legal aspect of reporting probably, and it's the kind of cloud that you might build with regional partners or with local partners. And then you're going to have external clouds where there's a nice commodity price for having, say, a second copy of your data or a third copy of your data. And then one of the things that I really saw coming out of this track is a more of a need for a community cloud, and that's one of my my personal dreams, and one of the reasons I brought the Kualia Lay Project into what I was talking about today, because I really see where we're going in development there. And Kualia Lay stands for Open Library Environment. We have a group of 15 research libraries from all different types of institutions coming together to build that kind of application that will eventually live in that community cloud and support us in different ways so we can go after pricing at scale and be able to afford what we want to do and what we need to do for the consumer-based devices that we've heard about from some of our other speakers this morning. And that way, we still have some key challenges there, and we heard that in several of our tracks. And the big key piece here that I wanted to mention today is about federated identity. It has to happen for higher ed in a way to enable this to move forward like I can see it happening. And so that's really what I wanted to push today. And the two icons I have up there are HathiTrust and Kualia Lay. And HathiTrust, Diana mentioned the other day, that's a key piece that we're working on at IU with the University of Michigan. And that is building shared infrastructure for a digital library. So that we no longer have to have the items that we own in our digital library taking up a silo of storage at our own institutions. We can share that among many, many institutions. And we've already been pretty successful at growing that. We have about 25 different institutions involved with HathiTrust in doing that. Right now, it's pretty consumed with the Google Books project. But at some point, it really will be the next kind of cloud community layer for our digital library infrastructure. And when we look at how that moves forward, I think we need to look even beyond our collaborations and interdependence with other campuses, but look at folks who are in our same sphere, places like museums who are building their own kind of cloud community with a tool called Collection Space. Look at archives, look at what they're doing with Archon and the Archivist Toolkit, and how that could be built as an application layer in this kind of community cloud for cultural heritage institutions. That's one way that I see it because I'm coming from the library sphere. But if you look at that just across higher ed as a whole, there's lots of those kind of connections we could be making with other institutions that may not be a .edu, but might have the same mission going forward. And that's my slides.
Yeah, great, Robert. Thank you. All right, great job, panel. We're going to change the focus of our discussion here a little bit now. This is going to be our chance. We're going to get you involved. You'll notice you're all sitting around tables, and that's very good. What we'd like you to do is to group up and maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 people together. And panelists have put together a number of questions, and we're going to display them on the board here. And there they are. I think everybody can see them and read them. I'm not going to read them to you. But the goal here will be is for you to get together, form a discussion group, and then spend a couple minutes getting to know the people in your discussion. And then pick one or two of these questions and develop them. So go ahead and slide your chairs around, get comfortable, get to know your neighbors, and we'll check back with you in about 20 minutes. The panelists have returned to their seats. Now it's time to hear from you and your table. I guess in the interest of time, what we want you to do is to have representatives from your discussion groups come up and really, this is your opportunity to share your discussion with the room. And we don't have time to cover the whole thing. So what one thing do you want to share with the rest of the room?
We had two learning technologists, and so we focus on learning technologies, the interdependence, and professional development. The concept currently of three IT groups, central learning tech and centralized IT, with three separate faculty advisory groups, three disconnects. Okay. Central IT, libraries, and learning technology need to be brought together cohesively to face the faculty. The questions that we ended with after all of this, are the roles of librarians going to go away? Do we need them? Is the role of central IT still going to be there? And is the role of a learning technologist going to be there? Whether we get rid of the organizations or what do we do with them? Is it valuable to have a person that understands information, understands how to do collaboration, and understands how to teach? And I think that's the longest term question we face. Do the roles survive, even if the organizations fall apart?
Very good. Thank you. Did we have any response or any additional thoughts on that?
I'll make one comment. We've through our really integrated organization, our integrative organization at Xavier, one of the realities to that question that I will mention is that these roles will continue to exist if these roles stay relevant. And And that means change, adaptability, focusing on the responsibilities that these positions will have in the future. The only way I think they will not continue to stay relevant is if they allow themselves to become extinct because they don't want to change.
Okay. Very good.
I'll just add a comment. I think an important point brought up that learning technologists are an IT organization, libraries, vice provost office, and in these economic times, partnerships and working together, I think, are key in order to provide services and be relevant. And there's an enormous amount of exciting opportunities to partner for grant writing and creating new services and initiatives on our campus.
Very good. Thank you. Yes, you're next.
Well, our table kind of focused on the how can we as IT professionals best prepare to lead the changes. I'm a computer guy. We had a couple other IT people at our table. I think that IT guys are going to have to lead by inspiring and nurturing collaboration between the IT department and the academic departments. We're going to have to build it on trust, both computer guys trusting the academics, because, you know, we know it's always kind of been a culture of autonomy in higher ed, you know, individual departments kind of being their own islands, sometimes even having their own servers in their own offices. And so we haven't always trusted them to be able to lead to, you know, host their own stuff, but they haven't always trusted us to understand their needs. So it's going to have to be trust both ways from now on, I think. First, you know, getting their servers out of their offices and into data centers, and then even a little down the road, getting stuff maybe out of data centers and into the cloud.
Thank you.
I agree. And speaking from the infrastructure side, what's interesting is we're looking at parallel trusts. In other words, we're struggling so much with faculty who are hiding servers under their desks. We, as central IT, are asking them to pull those servers out from their desks and put those servers in our data centers. And at the same time, central IT is having real problems with trusting the cloud. So I think that's an interesting lesson for central IT. It is exactly the same problem. But, I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, so I think the question is, did your table come up with any ways that we could help with the professional development of some of our IT professionals so that they actually can communicate better?
And while you're thinking about that, I'll make one extra comment there. We see the same things when we're helping faculty with digital humanities projects, right? Why is that box in there under their desk? Because we didn't make it easy enough for them to take the applications that they need to have running either in our servers or our virtual environments or wherever else it is.
I'm actually guilty of that. I have a K-base running from one of my labs on a server off campus that I'm paying for just because other people in the IT department didn't really step up. Sad but true. I know there's lots of opportunities for everybody on campus to, you know, get experience to communicate better and trust more. And I've tried to take advantage of some of the opportunities, just, you know, even from HR. But I'm still terrified because I'm standing up here in front of a microphone in front of all these people. So I've got a ways to go, and I know a lot of people in IT have a ways to go because it's just, it's not really part of our culture, I don't think, you know. Even among other computer guys I've worked with in the past, you know, kind of more comfortable around the screen and the keyboard, not talking so much. So we're all going to have to learn to talk more.
And yet, we have to note that you're doing it.
Yeah.
The most important thing is not that we try and fail, it's that we fail to try. And those soft skills, you're being intrepid, you're doing this, that's a lesson for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Could we have another couple of people come up to the microphone, please?
And if you don't mind.
No, that's fine.
Standing here and talking to a group with my back to them feels odd. My name is Patrick Gossman. I'm at Wayne State University in Detroit. Great table over here, rather diversified themselves from deputy CIO, librarians, folks that work directly with faculty. So we had IT and library sitting there actually working with each other, which still is interesting because rather different cultures, but some merging. A number of key words came up in our group. One was just being awareness, starting to look outside of our own boxes within our own institutions and elsewhere. And maybe by going to conferences other than those that we always go to, we read what we know, we go to conferences about what we know, and we talk with people about what we know, and we're very comfortable there. And so Brian's heading off to library conferences to see what he can learn there and better work and be proactive rather than reactive. One of the key things that I thought was fascinating over here is getting it's collaboration at all levels. Within our own organizations, across departments, within institutions, across institutions, not only with people, ideas, but also data repositories, and maybe even resources. It kind of tied the top one here with all the things about development. I love this piece here about trust, because that ties in with what we talked about over here, which is, oh, my God, we're dealing with people. Now, I'm going to stop on that one because people. One of the things here is IT has an awful rep with a number of faculty at, well, at least one institution, I think maybe more, because we come charging in, yep, it's a problem to be solved, yep, here's the answer, you're stupid, we've got it fixed, take it. From the faculty rep side, it was like, you know what, maybe we need to get to know them first, understand where they're coming from, what their problems are, listen first, you know. And again, these are all themes that I've heard throughout the present, you know, number of presentations here. But it's something to pay attention to, sit back and say, hey, these are people, and we need to build relationships and work together. And if you build relationships, that leads to trust. And if you have trust, then there's a lot of things that you can do that you wouldn't do otherwise. And then in an atmosphere of trust, maybe you can do some of the collaborations that we talk about where you're willing to say, you know what, my job is no longer needed, but this over here is needed, and I can move over there and work towards collaborations that really focus on getting closer to the faculty and the students and doing what needs to be done there. So that's what I got out of this group over here. I thought it was great. They're nodding, so I guess I did okay.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Okay, and who is next, please?
Hello, everyone. I'm Jim Coolidge. I'm from Elmhurst College, and we had a nice conversation at our table also. Talked a little bit about collaborations, and I think I'll maybe highlight three. One, we had some project managers at the table, so the idea of tight collaboration with people who do that sort of work and our sort of work and the kind of thinking that goes behind that. Secondly, the idea of institutional research and IT becoming ever more merged and closer, that if we're about pushing information out broadly defined, here's a branch of the college that does that in some very direct kinds of ways. How do those relationships get tightened? And number three, to pick up on the comment of the last speaker, we mentioned a context from a different setting, from a branch of science called ethology, which is all about learning about animal behavior, variation in animal behavior by studying animals in their natural environments. So the joke behind ethology is you have to talk to animals in their own language. So the question is, how do we go about doing that? If we think about the animal, so to speak, in our world, our faculty, our students, others that we serve, how do we learn to talk to them in their own language and then learn those lessons to affect our own work?
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
I just want to comment on the institutional research departments in IT. I think that's critical moving ahead. Diana talked about analytics, academic analytics, business intelligence. It's a key partnership as we move ahead and all of us developing more skills and learning more about analytics.
And we saw that here both from the TRI presentation on BibApp, because what BibApp and another product we're using at IU under an NIH grant called Vivo is really doing is trying to take that output of our scholars and make it into something where they can use those analytics to find who's the best in their field to be working with from that collaborative sense, and how, you know, how we go about supporting that above our institutions with that infrastructure.
Very good. Yes, sir.
So I think, you know, we're seeing a really interesting reoccurring theme with, you know, what we do today and what we're going to do tomorrow is going to be different, and how do we survive that? And Melissa, you really pointed out in your opening remarks about You know, we can't leave the people behind just because the technology is changing. Our group got together and talked about that, and what are we going to do? And, you know, one of the things came out is that a successful IT person acts as a liaison between what the organization wants to do and what the technology can do for the organization. The technology might change, but a successful IT person is the liaison between those two things. That still needs to happen. And it's the, you know, we talked about analysts, and one of the comments from yesterday's session on ITIL that Beth did was that the, you know, the help desk and the customer services people say yes, and the systems people say no. The systems people need to be engaging with the process of the business, understand what it is the organization needs to do instead of thinking about the technology. That's common sense, but that was sort of our takeaway on that.
Thanks, Kayak Pete. Well, I figure I've already lost my job because I walked by my boss's table just when he was saying, we need to get more people out at the edge and get away from having all these people managing our hardware. So I've already lost my job. But for those of, you interested in some of what Pete just talked about, there's an article in the current EDUCAUSE Quarterly written by Shel Wagner from UC Berkeley that actually touches on this, and it's in the context of cloud computing. And he discusses how there's going to have to be IT demand and IT supply personnel. And on the demand side, I think, is a lot of what you're talking about. It's the project managers, it's the process managers, it's the business analysts that can do business requirements. Those are really, really important people. And I remember sitting through a presentation on Tuesday from Northwestern University, and it sounded a lot like their consulting and project office really just had it down. I mean, they did all these things for their people. So, yes, so now the question is, how do we take the sysadmins out from behind their screens and help them before they lose their jobs?
I want to follow that with just one quick comment. I couldn't agree more. It really is about understanding the business of higher education. And it is, you know, Tip O'Neill, former Speaker of the House, had a wonderful saying, all politics is local. Well, one of the things we need to understand, it's not about the technology. All technologies are personal. All technologies benefit the institution. And the role of the very successful, and I want to come back to one word you used and challenge it just a little, and the word you used was survive. And I would change that to say prosper. You know, to be enormously successful, the better we can job we can do of this, understanding how we can leverage strategically technology to make the biggest difference for our institutions, those people are going to be enormously successful in the future. If you haven't picked up a copy of Spencer Johnson's book in a while, and I think it's out of print now, Who Moved My Cheese? The mouse doesn't try to survive. The mouse goes on to be the new cheesemeister.
Following right up with that real quickly. Sorry, Mark. Bruce Moss, CIO, University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, yesterday told me, he says, I'm sitting in all the education-oriented ones, not the technology-oriented sessions. He's looking that way towards what is it we are trying to do as an organization, and I thought that was brilliant. So wherever you are, Bruce, shout out to you. Good job.
Excellent.
I just want to follow up one comment. You used the word, like, business analyst in our IT organizations. And I think within IT organizations, getting teams together, our trainers are doing needs analysis on how to train people. Our learning technologists are doing needs analysis. And so we have, sometimes I think people in our organizations, we can benefit by getting them together to learn about the needs of our clients, whether it's a staff, faculty, or students, because we have a lot of strong expertise in the organizations.
Very good.
I'm going to use this as a segue because I was the guy that was the no guy. We talked and explored really the first two bullet points and the partnerships around collaboration in student learning and IT, libraries and IT, HR departments and IT, and those kinds of things. And it all boiled down to, for the IT professionals, really moving from a mindset of ownership of stuff, whether it's the server, the network, the software, to really ownership or partnership of the partnership, the relationship, and finding ways to build those skills for the IT professional moving forward, because I too will be out of a job shortly.
Thank you. I'm a no person too.
And that was actually a question we had from somebody on Twitter, and it was directed to David, but it was about how important do you feel it is for the CIO to partner with the provost and the chief business officer in your institution?
Well, you know, clearly it's critical. However, this question has an underlying assumption, and the underlying assumption is that all of those three parties are focusing on the future and not the past. And I think the critical thing here is that it's difficult to have effective it's incredibly important to have that kind of an essential partnership between the financial side of the house, the academic side of the house, and the information resources broadly defined side of the house. What makes it, in my experience, incredibly difficult is when you've got one or more parties that are not focusing on going into the future, that are focusing on how do we preserve the past. And I think that's the greatest challenge in my mind that that higher education faces today, is how do we, instead of continuing to try to build monuments to the past, we all need to try to focus on building bridges to the future.
I just want to follow up on that. An earlier comment about networking and this ownership and co-ownership, the concept of social networks. I was at a leadership session once, and they asked us to visually map out our social network. So who else do I know and meet with on a regular basis in the IT organization, in the Center for Teaching and Learning, and faculty? And it's an interesting process to visually map out people you know well at your institution, and where are their gaps? Where do you need to start new conversations with people? And it's an interesting exercise.
Very good.
Hi. Our table, like so many of the others, really concentrated on the first. I don't know if that was a strategic decision on your part to put that first. I don't know. What we found was we actually just began to tell stories as we went around the table of our experiences and what we were trying to get done right now and what we hope to get done in the future. And what we found were that we all had collaboration goals, but on very different scales. Some of us were looking within our own department. Sometimes it was between campuses or different colleges within the universities. And in one case, it was between universities. So being able to leverage the services of one university that was maybe had a larger infrastructure in a particular area for another one. And when you guys gave us time, then we realized we had to come up with some sort of a theme between among all these things, and we realized what it was, what we were all struggling with, was building of trust, as other people have mentioned. So maybe what we actually did, instead of discussing the first question, it may have been that we discussed the second question, and that the competency that we need to build as we go forward is our competency with working with other people who maybe have very different goals than ours in order to achieve what the university actually needs.
I was going to mention that kind of storytelling, you know, a lot of digital humanists will call that a folksonomy, and getting those folksonomies out really helps, you know, with that layer of trust when you're trying to build that.
Good, thank you. Roger?
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Our table ended up dancing around with questions 2, 3, and 4. And when we got to dealing with looking at number 2 about competencies, we decided we had to talk about this little phrase that popped up when all of our eyebrows just kind of went, what is the proper role of students in faculty development? Mm-hmm. To what extent can we leverage these net savvy students of ours in a manner to help our faculty develop these sort of competencies for 21st century teaching and learning? And how do we do this in a way that the faculty will respect and not feel insulted, perhaps, at being taught by their own students?
Fantastic question, and one worth going back to your campuses and pursuing. And research shows if you engage undergraduates in research opportunities or working with faculty. They're going to, you're going to retain them, and they're going to graduate sooner. And there are a lot of exciting models out there that undergraduate students are be part of a course redesign team where they actually may be helping with teaching, helping with research, and you get different reactions from faculty. It's a process that needs to be well designed, but it's a great question. Wish I would have been there for that conversation.
I think one, you know, an interesting thing to note that I hadn't thought about, one of the greatest roles that students can play today, and I'll go back and say throughout the entire history of higher education, with all of the attempts to, you know, kind of transform, to reinvent higher education from the outside, from external pressures, nothing has ever been as successful as transforming higher education and reforming education through the history of education in this country than the pressure from within by students. And so I think, you know, one of the greatest things that can, that students can do to help the future of higher education in this country is to speak to the way they need to be taught. You know, and specifically, there's a wonderful expression that that's something to the effect of, teach the student that's in front of you, not the student in your mind.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
Good morning. Our group tackled the question of what interdependent activities can learning technologists engage in order to support new learning environments. And it really, our discussion touched on a lot of the themes that have emerged this morning, the issue of trust, the issue of collaboration. But the interesting point for, to my mind, was a lot of these issues ended up revolving around the ownership of technology initiatives. For example, Bowling Green State University this morning gave a really interesting talk about WordPress and how they wanted to have a blogging platform for everyone. And when they first went to IT, they were like, well, it's open source. We don't want to touch that. And so they tried it as a pilot and then showed the success and went back to IT. And they were like, oh, great, let's do this. And similarly, then when they went to marketing, they said, well, marketing, we want to hold control over everything that is part of, you know, the message that goes out on the website. And then through negotiation, they were able to leverage that forward. So our suggestion is to sort of be upfront and address on an organizational basis these issues of technology ownership. And one approach that we use at our institution is we have an academic technology steering committee that has representatives from different organizational units, from academics, from IT, from, we don't have one from marketing yet, but I think that's one of my takeaways from this from this morning, is that we probably need one, from our facilities people and from our online division and so forth, so that when people have ideas that they want to try, instead of some department having that server under the desk that nobody knows about and nobody else in the organization benefits from that experiment, instead we try to take those initiatives and percolate them up to this committee so that there's sort of a sanctioned pilot, so that there's some rigor to it in terms of what we'll let you try that. We'll give you the money to do it. But in return, we expect certain things, such as, you know, what are the, you need to report back on what your outcomes are. And it needs to happen in sort of a structured way so that we can really leverage your experience, you know, in an organization-wide basis. And what that really speaks to is when you know as an IT person, as an academic person, as a student even, that your concerns have, that you have a representative on that steering committee who's speaking to your concerns, it helps to formulate that environment of trust that your needs are being represented and spoken for.
I could add, just from personal experience, we have a similar situation at St. Ben's and St. John's. We don't call it the steering committee. We call it the Committee on Academic Computing. And it's four faculty members that are voted into that committee. And it is wildly successful. We give them a great deal of latitude. We even give them basically control over a good portion of our capital budgets and to be able to make determinations as to what's worthy of funding versus what's not. And they report back to their own constituency. It works really, really well. And they've saved IT a lot of headaches over the time. Okay, who is next, please?
I think you've really identified a competency really in the art and science of managing advisory and governance groups. That's an important skill to have.
Well, the rest of my group is left, so I guess I get to interpret for them. To pull through together a lot of the things that have already been discussed, we talked a lot about professional development, and you know, there's some obvious places with communication. But thinking about some of the other comments about the environment, I think there's also a little bit of cultures, because, you know, the academics, the librarians, the technology people are in different environments, different cultures, and making an effort to learn about the other cultures can help build the trust. And I have an advantage there. I'm married to a faculty member, so I have some good insights in the academic culture. She gets some good insights into the technology culture. Maybe she doesn't want to. But we can see where the trust links are broken between the two, or people are just passing, you know, they're talking about the same thing, but they don't realize it. And so I think that could be an interesting thing. But for professional development, we thought about, you know, how do you take the system administrator and get them to understand that they need to be doing other things because there are going to be these other opportunities. And I think there might be a trust issue there. I mean, you have to show them how they're going to be valuable to the university. And maybe it's even just stop thinking about them as a system administrator. That's almost a cog in a machine. But, you know, what are they responsible for? How do they contribute to the overall success of the institution? Because I think there's another part there. There's the comment about, you know, there's nothing constant in technology except change. But I might argue that we don't really like it. And so we have to understand and trust that it's going to be, change is going to be for the good, or also it's going to happen anyway. We trust that we're trying to do something to get the system administrators and everyone else that might be losing their job, like Melissa, have them still be part of the organization and have a value.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Panel, anything to add?
Well, I think a lot of this struggle we have on the infrastructure side with the infrastructure personnel, as David is saying, is getting them to be able to connect what they do behind their screens with what's actually happening out on campus and the population that they actually serve. I mean, let's face it, these people sit at their desks all day for the most part. I stopped in on one of our network engineering meetings once, and I'm sure they love having the director show up, and I asked, okay, so 802.11n is now a standard. Do we need it here? And I just saw, no, we don't need that kind of wireless bandwidth on campus. We don't. I said, okay, fine. Let's think about this. What if I tell you that we've been talking to our Learning Technology Center and that streaming media is going to become an important part of teaching and learning going forward? And I picked up my laptop and I said, let's pretend this has an N radio in it. I'm a student, and I want to watch my professor's video after I've gone to class, or maybe I want to review it a couple more times. Where am I sitting? What day of the week is it? What time of the day is it? And how many other students are sitting in the same darn place that I am? And then I started to see the light bulbs go off, and they said, oh, well, we see a lot of students in the student union. We see them in the Library Commons. See, they hadn't made the mental connection between the population they serve and what they do. And I think we need to do more of that for our infrastructure personnel.
And if they're all sitting in the library at 1 in the morning, that's when you know you need the inn.
You know, one challenge that I would give everyone in this room that I think is really critical is to think about, it's the way we view these things that makes all the difference in the world to us, which is to say this. There's a really good book called The Way of Transition, and the book really separates out the whole idea of change as something that happens anyway, and transition, which is the way we deal with it. And I'm saying this to say, I would challenge us to think not in terms of losing our jobs, but the tremendously powerful, wonderful jobs we can have once we let go of what we have been doing and embrace what we can do. And it's a completely different way of looking at things.
Okay, thank you. We have time for one more, and you're our last today.
Okay. We had quite a varied discussion at our table. We didn't exactly focus on a specific question, but we engaged in very interesting discussion with two of my colleagues from UW, Stevens Point, representing various areas, and gentleman from Kenya and a young lady from St. Thomas, Minnesota. And indeed, we do make a difference. Change is difficult, but we do need to change. We see the IT professionals that are hibernating in their cubicle or in the bowels of buildings and doing the magic that goes on our campuses, and something goes wrong and you're looking for these computer gods. Change, though difficult, if we look ahead and we communicate with those whom we interact with, who we are responsible for supporting, we can form those partnerships. If we get out there and we show what we can do, we enlist a conversation amongst students, whether it's with surveys, getting out to student groups, getting to faculty groups to find out what are their goals, what do they wish to achieve, what can we do to facilitate that. We may stumble upon geriatric departments, for lack of a better word, where change is difficult because you maybe have a small number of young people, young faculty, who really want to move ahead, and your senior faculty who mentor those younger faculty who are a little bit intimidated. Maybe they're afraid that they won't keep up. But if we can facilitate and build that bridge, we can show them what they can do to make their life more fun, more interesting, to make learning exciting, to enlist those kinds of tools, the resources that technology can provide. In some of the sessions I participated in, it's how do you bring all these resources? A lot of campuses have many of the resources for social networking, social class status, but maybe it's segmented. And how do you get that common umbrella of resources out to people so you can deploy that information? And so many times faculty are looking for things, they may be intimidated to ask, not sure what can be done. We had some instances with separate people wanting to do separate servers and stuff, so to unify that and let everybody benefit. But if we take that step and show who we are, what we can do, how we can help their program survive, how we can help their majors survive, by making learning more interesting, by utilizing that technology, maybe we change. New opportunities present, not just for us, but for the faculty, for the departments, for the programs.
Thank you. Anybody want to add a quick comment? No? Well, I think we have kind of run out of time here. I just asked the panelists, do you have any final thoughts that you would like to send home with our audience?
Yes, I think the concept of change is relevant to this discussion, and I equate learning is about change. And if you think about learning, I encourage you all to connect with other people in the organization, learn how people do things in different areas. David has suggested a lot of good books for us to read, and ask people for feedback and spend time reflecting on what you currently know and embrace what you know, but be open to learning new ideas and working with people perhaps you haven't worked with in the future.
I would say this. We are all on a journey as we go through life of development and experience. And what I would suggest to you is go in a very intrepid way, which is to say fearlessly along that journey, trusting the future. And one of the best pieces of wisdom I ever received, believe it or not, was on a fortune cookie. And on this fortune cookie, which we literally have embraced as one of our slogans for my division, is seize opportunities to create the future. We have the opportunity as we go into the future to create that future together, seize that opportunity. Don't be, be fearless. Don't hold on to the past.
Mm-hmm. I think if I have a comment at all is that we're higher ed, and so we should be able to learn from the past. We've seen roles go obsolete before, and maybe we didn't do our best then. So this time, let's do right by our people going forward.
I think the main theme that I got, is even after listening to all the comments today, is one that I originally had in my slide and I took out, but it's one about taking those collaborations to interdependencies, and then when we take those interdependencies to shared sustainability for the community, that's where we're going to see some of the benefits of this change.
Very good. Thank you so much, panelists. I'm very impressed with your knowledge.
Thank you. Thank you, the audience.
Very good.
David Dodd, Linda Jorn, Robert McDonald, Melissa Wu, and Jim Koenig from the EDUCAUSE 2010 Midwest Regional Conference. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.